This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good Monday to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. We're going to get more into the NBA playoffs as the first games are in the books. We'll head into this week with games number two. One team that is really concerned about its playoff future, and that is the Dallas Mavericks. Luka Doncic suffered a strained calf in the season finale. He was not available for them in their game one against the Utah Jazz. Last week we talked about how troubling that is going to be. While he has not been ruled out for tonight's game, it is very, very unlikely that he will play. That's really going to be a problem for Dallas to get into a series against a team that matches up equally as well as they are with Luka Doncic, and certainly they don't match up with Utah without Luka Doncic, but that is a concern. But other than that, most of the playoff games, there weren't really too eye-opening moments. I think Minnesota beating Memphis was a big one for me, but the Philadelphia 76ers playing as well as they did in their game one win over Toronto was a little surprising. Again, this is a 4-5 matchup, and Philadelphia was at home, so it's not like I was blown away by it or anything. But Minnesota-Memphis was probably my biggest surprise over the weekend. I love the way that Brooklyn and Boston looked in game one. I hope this is a fun series. I hope it's an exciting series. But again, you never can take away something like the big takeaway of a close game in game one doesn't always mean that the series is going to get close. It just means it's close in that particular game. We'll see exactly what happens in game number two. That's one of the reasons I like the NBA playoffs so much in terms of these drawn out 7-game series, is because I like adjustments. I like it when coaches have to make certain moves. I mean, we got to see what Steve Nash, he saw what is in front of him. He's going to have to make adjustments. And the same thing with Ime Udoka of the Boston Celtics. He's also going to have to figure that out. We are also going to get into a little golf. Jordan Spieth won the RBC Heritage. And coming up tomorrow on ESPN, the Greg Norman documentary Shark is going to be a 30 for 30. And I said this last week, and I kind of feel this, I feel this in a way, that with Greg Norman being in the news because of this Saudi Golf League, I think that this, I know it takes a long time to make documentaries and produce them and process them and everything, but I got a feeling like the timing of it seems to be just right. And it's the timing of this Greg Norman, hey, here's everything you want to know about the 1980s and how Greg Norman was dominating golf, including the collapse in 1996 at the Masters. But it also gives you an insight into the guy that is creating a lot of turmoil in the way the golf is run.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, the dumb Monday time. After a weekend that was, we give you the good of the day. What is it?
Well, we actually have two, because one is an update.
Okay.
And we, you know, what we pride ourselves here is we like to give you guys updates. A few weeks ago, we talked about Iona's baseball team. And they were the bad of the day.
Oh, right. That's right.
Because they had the nation's longest losing streak. Well,
right.
That losing streak is no more. And
it ends
at 33 games.
Wow. That is really hard to do, lose 33 baseball
yes.
games.
Yes. Not only that, but I mean, they've lost some. They lost a game to Old Dominion 24-0. When they played Tennessee, they had back-to-back games. They lost the first one 29-0, then the second one 27-1.
Oh, God, those games stink. Baseball games stink when they're like that.
Yeah.
They're awful.
But the fun part of this is that they did win over the weekend. They had an 8-5 win over a school that you never would have heard of if it hadn't been for a certain Sweet 16 appearance.
St. Peter's?
St. Peter's, their rival.
They beat St. Peter's. Wow.
See, now, you know, I thought we'd forget this team. And yet, you know, Iona beats St. Peter's. You're like, oh, I wonder if it's that St. Peter's. Yes, it is.
Wow. Well, all right. Well done. Well done, so, Iona.
Yeah.
Did they celebrate like they won the World Series?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, champagne might have been popped or sparkling cider. I mean, there's some kids underage, so.
You know, streaks get old after a while. You get tired of hearing about it every single day. No, good for them.
I know. So we got to always have an update.
Yeah.
You know, I got to let you guys know. But the real good of the day And I think this is absolutely brilliant. I think this is something that you and I would definitely do. But a Scottie Scheffler uses his master's green jacket to get out of doing household chores.
Yeah, I saw this is brilliant. This is absolutely brilliant.
I mean, it's also a no-brainer, right?
I would think so.
If the wife asks you to do the dishes, do you just run to the closet, put on the green jacket, and do what he does? Where he's like, I'm still having to do this?
Yeah. I just, you know, just, yeah, wearing the green jacket must give you a sort of sense of authoritative presence, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, if you wear it out in public, people, I mean, it's like you're walking a red carpet all the time.
Yeah.
People
exactly.
will move out of your way. They'll offer you things. It's got to have the same rewards at home.
The good news for Scottie Scheffler's wife is he only can do this 1 year.
Right.
And then he's got to return the jacket, and it's got to stay at Augusta National.
It's going to be a long year, isn't it?
It's going to be a long year. But, you know, he only gets to do this 1 year, and then you get to have him back doing everything that you want him to do.
Can you just imagine? He's sitting on the couch just relaxing. She's like, can you take out the trash? And he's like, honey, look, green jacket, I don't do that.
Well, you know what he said? Like, he won like four events, and he won four tournaments in like six events. And he said afterwards he was tired. Like, let the man rest.
Yes.
Give the man a break. He's been playing high-level competitive golf for 6 weeks. Like, let him chill. It's not easy winning golf tournaments. Let him do dishes. Give me a break.
Yeah, come on.
Like, you don't necessarily, she has to do them, but he could maybe hire somebody to do dishes for a few
weeks. Right. I mean,
for a few weeks.
Just the green jacket. That's all
just
he needs.
Just wear the green jacket. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that the Angels manager Joe Maddon.
Yeah.
Over the weekend called for that rare bases loaded intentional walk.
Well done. Not enough managers do this.
Yeah.
So who did he walk? They were playing Texas.
Walked Corey Seager.
Oh, okay. That's not bad.
But the problem was that he went out to the mound. The infield was all for it. This was like only in like the second or the third inning. And then the Angels were only down by one or two at that time. Mike Trout was very surprised by this.
Was Seager batting in like the seventh spot and they were going to get the 8-9 batters up?
I don't know what the real reason. His reasoning was that he decided to walk Seager and allow a run to be scored instead of Seager have a big hit. Because Seager does that.
Well, maybe Seager had a very good batting average against the pitcher that was on the
maybe.
Mound.
I mean, where I'm looking at it as bad is that it didn't rub Mike Trout the right way.
Yeah.
And that's somebody that you want on your side, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd think so, right? Like, you want to make sure that Mike Trout isn't, like, getting more and more angry with being on this baseball team.
Yeah.
Right?
Because, I mean,
you don't want Mike Trout causing any problems.
The only narrative with the Angels is that you need to get Mike Trout into the playoffs.
Right.
Nothing else. As far as a manager, you don't need to win the World Series. You just need to get into the playoffs.
Do they say to him, quiet, we're getting into the playoffs. Like, trust us. Trust me, Mike Trout. I'm Joe Maddon. I gave the Cubs a World Series.
We'll let a run score here. I mean, fortunately for them, it didn't really matter. They won the game 9-6.
They won the game anyway, right?
So, but yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's one of those things we've seen it in basketball a lot, where if you make one of the players mad, you know, or you're not,
it could cause issues.
It causes issues.
Yeah,
and so I'm just wondering if you can have something similar here.
I think that. Because they won, Mike Trout probably doesn't think about it. But next time it happens, you know, make sure Mike Trout's happy. I agree with you.
Or right. Convince him that it was his idea all along.
Right, exactly. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is there is a Twitter user out there who is trying to sell his Lamar Jackson Ravens jersey, his signed Lamar Jackson Ravens jersey.
Right.
To which Lamar Jackson responded, "That's not my signature."
Uh-oh.
And what could a Twitter user do but argue with them, saying, it's authenticated.
And Lamar Jackson's like, no.
Lamar Jackson's like, I think I know my signature. That's not my signature.
Hold on. But I'm going to stick up for the Twitter user.
No. Yeah, he's got an issue.
Because I've seen athletes scribble stuff without any regard to their signature. Like, if you ever watched an athlete go down the line, sign
just real quick,
stuff,
or on their way out.
I remember when I was, I think I told this story before. I needed Paul Tracy's autograph on something for the radio station I was working at years ago. He's a race car driver. And we were heavily involved in, like, these giveaways. And I had a thing that, and I got permission, because media members are not allowed to ask for autographs. But we went through the right channel to say, hey, we're auctioning this stuff off. Can we get Paul Tracy to sign this thing? And it was a piece of paper, and it was a picture of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We wanted Paul Tracy to sign it as part of Team Penske. So we had the other two drivers of Team Penske on it. We wanted Paul Tracy, I kid you not, and I like Paul, so I'm not criticizing him. I'm not putting him in a bad light here. He's a good guy. He's a really nice guy. But he took the pen, Ron, and went up, down, up, down, up. And that was his signature. It had no P on it. It had no turn of a P on it. It didn't even have a cross on it to make a T. It certainly didn't have no Y. There was no A or C involved in this whatsoever. It was up, down, up, down, up. And that was his signature. It did, like, at one point, my sales lady that I had to get this, she goes, did he even sign this? I go, yes, I saw him sign this. So that's what so then it went off into its thing. But so I think athletes do that all the time. I don't think it's just him. I think athletes get a pen and like, bah!
Yeah.
Bah!
Well, I mean, if you look at this signature, the only thing that's clear is that there's a number 8. Because it's signed within the 8 of Lamar Jackson's number. And so you can see with the 8, I couldn't make out, I can't figure out looking at it if that says, how that says Lamar Jackson or Lamar J or something like that.
We need to take it to Pawn Stars.
Exactly.
I have an expert. I have a friend. He's an expert in this. We'll get him to look at it.
And so, but for the Twitter user, I mean, because first Lamar Jackson's like, I didn't sign that. And he's like, oh, you probably forgot, because it's authenticated by JSA. And he's like, boy, I know my signature. That ain't it.
See, now he just destroyed this guy's sale of the, like, would you buy it now?
No.
Like, if you had the money and you wanted a Lamar Jackson autographed jersey, would you buy it from this guy?
Not at all.
Not at all.
So now he's got to take it up. He's taking it up with JSA to figure out, how is this authenticated? Why is this authenticated?
Yeah, I don't even, like, I have no idea how that business works.
Neither do I.
How do they authenticate that stuff? Do they seriously do it, like, on Pawn Stars? Where they get a guy goes, okay, as you can see, the W here is just curved
towards
the end. And that's a sign that this is a very rare signature feat. So we do believe that this is Woodrow Wilson's signature.
I mean, because even if you had a photo of him signing it,
right?
How do you know he was signing that one?
You have no idea. You have no idea. Yeah, that's the worst, man. Like, seriously, when you're famous, if you're a young person out there and you think you're going to be famous, practice your signature.
Yeah.
Practice it so that anybody gives you something, you sign it that way every time. You don't scribble it. You don't get through it. Give everything your attention, even if it takes a little longer.
Didn't we all do that in high school?
Of course we all did. Yeah, it was fun.
I always practiced my signature in high school.
I always did.
Try to find something new, like a new way. Now I have something that I'm happy with and...
I always did. I thought it was fun. I thought it was neat. But yeah, keep practicing it.
So I always thought, because I had like those autographed baseballs and trying to figure out what the signature actually was, and I was like, no, I don't ever want to be that. I wanted my signature to be cool, but at least you knew who it was from.
Yeah. Do you have anything autographed that you're like you love? Like you're like so glad it's signed and it like you found a way to get that signed for that particular individual?
Well, I've never gotten anything signed, like went up to someone. I mean, I guess, no, there's one thing or a couple of things, but I do have Peter Mayhew's autograph.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
On a Chewbacca photo. But I think the one I had, and this was my wife's doing, here at the studio, we had Pete Rose and Tony Perez showed up.
Oh, nice.
And my son missed a baseball practice, so my wife thought it would be kind of fun to write a note to to his baseball coach. And so she wrote two pieces of paper, said, please excuse my son for missing practice today.
Oh, very cool.
And it's signed by Pete Rose and Tony Perez.
That's neat.
And we gave one to his coach, and we kept the other.
Well, that's that's awesome.
I thought that was fun.
Yeah, that's very cool. That's very cool.
Because how often are you going to get a, you know, get out of jail note type thing?
Very true. Very true. So, all right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. We'll also get into some golf. Jordan Spieth won the RBC Heritage as we also continue to look at round one of the playoffs in the NBA. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on, again, Sports Map Radio. It is Wake Up Call on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Congratulations, Jordan Spieth. He won the RBC Heritage yesterday. That was actually pretty fun, that final stretch of golf on Sunday. He made a long putt at 18, not really a long putt, like a medium putt at 18 for a birdie. He had two eagles on the front side, finished with a 5-under 66 at Harbortown, finished at 13-under par, and then was in a one-hole playoff with Patrick Cantlay, and then he wins for the first time since last year's Valero Texas Open, which coincidentally finished on Easter Sunday as well. So he has two wins, both on Easter, for Jordan Spieth, and his wife and little baby came out there to greet him, and he's back in the winner's circle. It was not, I tell you, Jordan Spieth, when he was 20, 21 years old, looked like he was going to be the next big thing. And for a while he was, he really was, because he had won the Masters and the U.S. Open in the same year. And then he had a phenomenal 2015. So he was the Masters champion. He was the U.S. Open champion. He almost got into a playoff at the British Open at St. Andrews. He almost got he gave Jason Day a run for his money at the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits. I mean, he won Player of the Year. I mean, he was the thing. He was 21. But after a while, you declines a little bit, and you start getting out of the public eye, and all these other golfers are starting to take over. And then he won the 2017 British Open. So it was like a year where he was kind of, and then he wasn't winning. And then he won the British Open in 2017. So he has three major championships. He competes at the Masters for the most part. He didn't make the cut this year, but for the most part, he's relatively competitive at Augusta National. Just a couple of years ago when Patrick Reed won, he had a final round barrage of birdies to make that one close. But yet he has kind of disappeared a little bit from the winner's gallery. You know, he'll win a tournament and then disappear for a while, win a tournament. But it's always good. Like, I like Jordan Spieth a lot. I think he's good for the game. I never like to see guys that have tremendous success early part of their career and then sort of disappear. I'm glad to see him pop back up. I think at some point, he's got a lot of golf to be played in his career. I think at some point he does complete the career Grand Slam, but that's not promised to anybody. I mean, you would have said that about a lot of golfers at some point in their career, that they would get all four majors. Some of them just never do. They just can't. They can't. You know, Phil Mickelson never won a U.S. Open. He came in second so many times, but he never won that U.S. Open. And it doesn't look like he's ever going to win that U.S. Open. So Spieth needing a PGA championship to complete the career Grand Slam, it's easy to say when he's 22, 23, 24, 25, oh, yeah, he'll get that. But you never know. I mean, it's winning majors is difficult. It's not promised on anybody. Rory McIlroy at the Masters, same kind of thing. Rory McIlroy's never won at Augusta. When he was 22, I think it was, he had the lead, lost it, went on to win the U.S. Open. But over the years, people have said, oh, Rory will win one jacket, maybe even a couple. You're not sure. You know, you don't know. You think because time will it just seems like it's inevitable. There's so many years that he'll play in that. But you don't have any idea. You never know where somebody's game goes. And I'll give you the perfect example of that. That's David Duval. David Duval was the number one golfer in the world when Tiger was in the game. Right? When Tiger was in the game winning majors, David Duval was still the number one golfer in the world. He one time shot a 59 on a Sunday to win at Palm Springs. And he won the 2001 British Open. You know, David Duval was one of the top golfers in the world. And then out of nowhere, completely disappeared. Just disappeared. And that was it. So you never know with these guys. But I was glad to see Jordan Spieth. He's one of my favorite guys to watch.
But it is funny. Like you're mentioning, we're seeing Scottie Scheffler just have this meteoric rise.
Right.
And it very well could be like 3 years from now, you know, he's winning the RBC Heritage.
Yeah.
And that's it.
You don't know. That's exactly right. It's a weird game. It's so interesting because it's like any other sport. I mean, nobody really masters any sport, right? I mean, every hitter that's ever on a hot streak cools off. Every football player finds moments in their game where they struggle with whatever it is that they do, play quarterback, running back, wide receiver, et cetera. So every sport has a level of mastery and then a level of times where you struggle within the sport. But golf does that on the bigger stage in terms of, like, it's because it's individual that you can't really blame it on any other thing but yourself. Like, if you're a quarterback and you're struggling, you can blame the offensive line, a shoulder injury, you can blame the play calling, coaching, whatever. But a golfer is out there by himself. A golfer is the one that is responsible for his own training, his own preparation, everything. He hires the caddy. He's responsible for it all. There's no other out. He hires his coach, etc. So when there is a failure, it's on him and him alone. That's it. There's no other outside forces, right? They all know how to play in weather. They all know how to play in certain conditions on a golf course. That's it. And sometimes the game just eats you alive and there's nothing you can do about it. And you don't know how to get it back. You could be putting lights out and the next thing you know, you can't drain a 2-footer. And that's where you struggle. And that's when golfers know this. When you are on a hot streak, take advantage of it as much as you can because the cold streak comes. And you're right. It's so hard too, because we love projecting success on people. We love it. When we see an athlete that hits us in a way that makes us go, oh my God, are you kidding me? This guy is on another level, right? And then they win a championship at some point, and you go, the championships are going to run through this guy for the rest. There's nobody that's going to, but they do. Eventually they do. Patrick Mahomes is a perfect example of this, to be honest with you, in the NFL. When he got the Chiefs to that AFC title game against the Patriots, right, where he didn't get the ball in overtime, what was everybody saying? Like, that kid's amazing, and he should have gotten the ball in overtime. That could have been a different outcome. Instead, the Patriots are going to the Super Bowl, but the Chiefs probably should have gone to the Super Bowl. Okay, the next year comes around, and Mahomes does get to a Super Bowl. He does lead them to a Super Bowl, and they win. They beat the 49ers, and what do we – this opens the floodgate. Well, 2 years later, we're still waiting for the second one. Now, it's not a long time, but it goes to show you that the immediate flood of success and championships isn't really promised on anybody, right? Then, you know, things can occur. Spieth was like that. There was at 2015, for those of you who follow golf, there was nothing outside of Tiger. There was nothing like Spieth in recent memory, in terms of, like, not even Rory
had that
thing where he was in everything.
Or not even Scottie Scheffler right now.
I mean, Jordan Spieth was winning almost everything he touched. Like, the majors, like, he went to St. Andrews as the hottest golfer on the planet and almost got into the playoff. I think he needed birdie on 18 at St. Andrews to get into the playoff, and he made par.
And didn't it lip out, too? Like,
yeah, it came really close. He came really close. And then it's at Whistling Straits, Jason Day had to have a phenomenal run just to hold him back. And then he won the Tour Championship. I mean, he won the $1 million FedEx Cup. He was the guy, and he was 21 years old. I keep forgetting to mention this. He was only 21. So in a sport that was starved for the next Tiger, he was the right candidate for that. And then he kind of faded off a little bit. Now, again, he did win the British Open, so he did come back and win a major. But he now became part of a large group of golfers that were going to win, right? Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed. There was a large group of them. He was now in that mix, probably on the higher end. So yesterday's win at the RBC made a lot of people feel good. Back to the NBA playoffs as we go. Brian Barrett's going to join us. We're going to talk to him about the Celtics and the Nets and that series and what happened yesterday, including Kyrie's history with Celtics fans, how he left that city, and how the Celtics turned it around towards the end of the season. Ime Udoka is their head coach in his first year. How do they do it? That's all coming up as we continue.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Just a really fascinating game yesterday, game one between the Celtics and the Nets. A lot of storylines, of course, going into that contest, and buzzer beater at the end, the Kyrie Irving reaction. A lot of it just adds to the flair of this opening series. Brian Barrett joins us, WEEI in Boston, on the Celtics and the Nets, game one and a lot more. How are you, my friend?
Tony, I'm doing well, man. I would have been doing a lot worse if the Celtics ended up losing that game after Kyrie Irving went off. It would have been miserable. I can't imagine what he would have been saying after the game if they actually won.
Let's talk about Kyrie for a second. Sort of remind people again, and they know he played there, how the relationship broke down. How did we get to a point where this is not just booing a guy that used to play for us, it's booing a guy they really don't like?
Yeah, so it started with Kyrie Irving prior to his second season with the Celtics. The Celtics have an event with the season ticket holders. He says, "I'll be here as long as you'll have me." So he's saying he's going to sign with the team long term. So then fast forward to the All-Star break, or I should say a couple weeks before the All-Star break, he has a game at Madison Square Garden against the Knicks. They say, "Hey, you still plan to re-sign with the Celtics?" He says, "Ask me on July 1st. So he changes his opinion then. And then at the All-Star game, he's seen on a video with Kevin Durant saying two max slots, and then he denies that report. And then they play in a playoff series against the Milwaukee Bucks, and the guy laid down and quit. They won the first game, and then he quit. So, and then last year, he accuses the whole city of Boston of being racist during the playoff series as well. So there's all that adds into it with Kyrie. And obviously, yesterday, the back and forth, he's flipping off the fans. The fans are going at him, which, I mean, some fans are like mad about the fans. I don't really care about him flipping off the fans. I'm just happy that they won the game. But yeah, there's a lot of history there with Kyrie. And the thing about Kyrie Irving is he always tries to deflect blame away from himself. I mean, before the series, right, this guy has the audacity. He has the audacity to come out and say, "Hey, they should remember the good times that we had at the Garden." It's like, what good times? They went. They were one win away from the finals without you. The year you come back, you lost in the first round. There's literally no good times. They were supposed to be the one seed his final year, and they're the fourth seed. Not to mention, he completely destroyed the locker room. Like, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. There's been no good times with that guy.
Like, so how did you put into context, like, what he was doing? Because some people would say, oh, Celtic fans got into his head, but he scored 39 points. So I don't know if that description is accurate. How do you put the way he reacted and the way he also performed?
Yeah, I don't think, he was obviously great. I mean, what he finished with, 38, 39 points. I mean, they couldn't stop him whatsoever. I mean, and there's some adjustments they're going to have to make going down the road in this series. Like, I don't think Daniel Tice can play in this series because they're just going to go after him. But, yeah, I don't think the fans, I mean, maybe they bothered him a little bit, but it certainly didn't affect him. I mean, definitely on the offensive end, it may have affected him on the defense then because the Celtics, with him as the primary defender, were 12 of 20. That's 60%. And so they were certainly going after him defensively. And it was sort of poetic, Tony, that at the end of the game, it's Kyrie Irving who loses Jason Tatum for the easy basket.
Right.
I mean, we saw that plenty of times in Boston. But it's only going to get ratcheted up now because now everybody going to game two on Wednesday night. And, man, this feels like – it almost feels like recapping NFL games because there's so much time in between these games. They don't play again until Wednesday, but I think it's going to be – even ratcheted up louder. But I don't think Kyrie Irving was fantastic offensively for them. Their bigger issue was Durant was not good. I mean, the Celtics got into Durant. The Celtics really bothered Durant, but Kyrie was fine. But if they lose game two, I expect more stuff at the podium after the game because it's not going to be about the Nets losing. It's going to be about something that happened to Kyrie. That's what's going to happen.
Let's talk about the Celtics team, and they really turned it on in the last part of the season. They became one of the hottest teams in the league, one of the more dangerous teams in the league. How did they do it? What was the kick that started this incredible run towards the playoffs?
I think a lot of it has to do with Ime Udoka, right? Because, I mean, you go back to the Brad Stevens era, and Brad has done an outstanding job as a general manager, but always said that Brad Stevens, I mean, his offense, it was the Bernie Sanders offense. It's everybody gets a shot. And what Ime Udoka did is he finally created a hierarchy where Tatum and Jaylen Brown are taking the most shots and Marcus Smart is way down on the food chain. And then he brought this defensive system where they basically switch everything. I mean, they have so many elite defenders. Jason Tatum's a really good defender. Marcus Smart could win the Defensive Player of the Year. And obviously they're without Robert Williams right now. But Al Horford at 35 playing the way that he's played this season, I mean, it's absolutely shocking to me. The guy looks incredibly spry. I mean, I thank Oklahoma City for giving him a bunch of time off because clearly he got the rest. But I think most of it, to answer your original question, has to do with A, Ime Udoka, B, Smart taking the back seat in terms of not shooting the way that he was shooting in previous seasons. I mean, they played an elimination game a couple of years ago against the Heat. The guy took the most shots on the team. Like, what the heck is that, right? So, and then the other thing is Tatum as a playmaker. He's really evolved. I mean, last year, not a great playmaker. I mean, not bad for his age. He's not going to be LeBron Harden-type playmaker. He's more in the Durant mold, if you will. But this year, he's become a much better passer. And I give Udoka credit for that because Ime said after a game, it was on the 21st of January after they had lost to the Portland Trailblazers. He said, what are you doing when your shot's not falling? Ever since that point, Jason Tatum's assists have gone totally up. So I give Ime Udoka a ton of credit for this transformation.
Yeah, let's talk about him for a second because he doesn't seem to be afraid to call out players. Like he doesn't mind going right after Jason Tatum in public if he has a bad game. It's something that Brad Stevens always would tiptoe around. That's a completely if you were on that team under Brad Stevens and now you're on this team with Udoka, that seems to be dramatically different. How have they responded to that?
Oh, yeah, he does not care, Tony. I mean, the first thing he did, he put on like some Adrian Broner video where Adrian Broner, the boxer, was like calling everybody out like the first day of practice, said, this is what I'm going to do to all you guys. And at the beginning of the year, I got to tell you, because you mentioned they turned it on really after January 1st, but at the beginning of the year, we have a coach in town, Bruce Cassidy, the coach of the Bruins. He does the same thing. And Ime Udoka was doing this after like every loss. I'm like, I don't know how well this is going to work out. I mean, this has not happened with the Celtics team. And I give the players a lot of credit because to your original point, it's totally different than Brad. And obviously they've taken to it. He coaches all these guys hard. Another thing I would say is Tatum and Brown and to a lesser extent Marcus Smart, they were going to have to deal with that because of the fact that we know that those guys wanted Ime Udoka. He coached them with Team USA going back to the tournament a couple years ago, and Tatum last year, of course, played for the Olympic team. So this is a guy that they identified and they wanted. So they knew that he was going to coach him this way, so they had to deal with it.
It's interesting that with the Celtics here because they get this two seed. And look, I get it. Every opponent in the playoffs, you got to pay attention to. You got to be tough. But they really drew a completely different team than an average 17 seed out of the NBA. So in terms of the matchup, how do the Nets match up with the Celtics? How do you see this series going, giving the close game one?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, too, because the Celtics could have avoided this. And, I mean, I was on the other side. I thought, you know, I would take the easier road. I mean, I would lose and play the baby dinosaurs in the first round, like the final game of the season. They could have lost, play the baby dinosaurs in the first round, and then play the Heat in the second round instead of having to play the Nets and then the Bucks. I give them credit for the bravado, et cetera, but I felt like it was the wrong decision. I ultimately thought they would still win the series, but I just felt like they made the road more difficult for themselves. Maybe it's something they need to do, but I just look at that Nets team, and I look at some of the stuff last night. I mean, they were getting whatever they wanted at the rim, the Celtics. They took 52 shots, and they scored 52 points in the paint compared to Brooklyn at 36. They took 36 shots in the restricted area, and
yeah,
the Nets took 16. So they were living in the paint, whatever they did. I don't think that the Nets have enough defensively for the Celtics, and I don't imagine the Celtics, who are the best defense in the league this season, are going to play, with the exception of what they did on Durant. They're not going to play that poorly defensively. Their defense was not good yesterday, and I hope that Ime Udoka makes the adjustment of just get Daniel Tice off the floor. He was a good pickup. He certainly helped the Celtics, but he can't play in the series because the Nets are looking for anything they can to attack, and you can't attack Smart, you can't attack Brown, you can't attack Tatum, and we've seen you can't attack 35-year-old Al Horford, you can't attack Derek White. Grant Williams has played well defensively, so Tice is the one weak link. I'm wondering if he alters that. I mean, that's their hope, because the Nets are not going to be able to stop the Celtics. They don't have good defensive personnel. Who the hell knows what's going on with Ben Simmons? I can't imagine. I mean, that guy's, I know he's labeled as a defender, but if he does get back in the series after having an epidural, his first minutes of the season, you're going to put him on Jason Tatum. I mean,
right.
Good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. What about Robert Williams? What's his status for this series? Do we have any idea?
Yeah, so the exact 4-week point, if you will, would be game 5. Now, the Celtics, it keeps getting out there. It's been reported by multiple different people, including Woj, that he's, like, ahead of schedule. Because they didn't do the full repair. And I guess, like, I don't know the medical stuff, but apparently when you get in there, you can determine if you can repair the meniscus or take it out. And, look, this is, like, worse for him long term. I mean, you're more likely to get arthritis with this. But they took out the meniscus. So the good news for the Celtics in the short term is that means the player can come back quicker. So I would imagine, like, if this series goes deep, we're going to see him in game 6 or 7. Ideally, the Celtics like to end this thing early so then he can get rested up for Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks, because I mean, that's really when they're going to need Robert Williams. I believe they can beat the Nets without Robert Williams. They cannot beat the Bucks without him. They need that body if they're going up against Giannis.
Let's talk about the last play. What I loved about it was, I was saying this earlier, I think all good buzzer beaters that are set up, not just heave shots, I mean, ones that you can get a play out of, what I like is when players really do understand the clock. They understand what they can do in that time. And Marcus Smart, knowing exactly how much time he had and the eye contact he made with Tatum, is that something, and I'm maybe too broad of a question here, is that something that has been typical of this offense? Was that a play of a surprise? As a guy who watches a lot of this team, how did you see that play?
It's typical post January 1st, and Al Horford after the game said that if this was a couple of months ago, Jalen would have forced a shot there. He didn't do that. He kept the ball alive. He found Marcus Smart. Ime Udoka, to your point, Tony, said after the game that Marcus Smart would have shot that ball earlier in the season, but that's the maturation process with Marcus Smart. And then Jason Tatum, I mean, he catches Kyrie Irving sleeping. So, no, that is not something that we would have seen with the Celtics team earlier this season. I thought really it demonstrated unbelievable poise. Jalen not to force it, Marcus Smart not to huck up a three, which he's done throughout his career, and then Jason Tatum to stay alive. And not to mention, like, right before that, how about the defensive sequence where they shut off Kyrie? Kyrie did not want to give up the ball, so he throws Kevin Durant a flaming bag of fire with 2 seconds left on the shot clock. He has no chance at hitting that. So it was unbelievable to see that. And I give Ime Udoka a ton of credit for not calling a timeout, because then the Nets can adjust. They can set up their defense, which isn't great, but they can set up their defense. They can get any good defensive personnel they have. It's not a lot, but they can make that switch, get those guys in the court. So I give Ime Udoka a ton of credit for not taking that timeout, because he did have one remaining.
Outstanding. Brian, great stuff as always. Really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks a lot, Tony, and screw Kyrie Irving.
You got it. Brian Barrett, WEEI, up in Boston. Progressive Insurance, building your home and auto easy. Learn more at progressive.com. We'll talk more about Ime Udoka, because, again, the head coach of the Boston Celtics doing a lot of different things than Brad Stevens on next on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Brian Barrett, WEEI in Boston. He brings up a very good put. Ime Udoka is the new head coach of the Celtics. You probably forgot that Brad Stevens moved up. Danny Ainge left and Brad Stevens moved up, and they went after a new coach. And Ime Udoka, who was an assistant in the league for a while, played in the league a little bit. Do you know the actress Nia Long?
Yes.
She was in a couple of things, but she was in Friday, right? He's married to her.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. Nia Long. Hello.
Yeah. She was in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air too, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
A number of things. But Nia Long, like if you had told me Nia Long was married to a former NBA player, journeyman Ime Udoka would not be the one I would choose.
Yeah.
Right? Guy who bounced around the league for most of his career. And now he's the head coach. He was an assistant with the Nets. He was an assistant with the Sixers and the Spurs. But now he's the head coach at Boston. Now, here's the thing. Go ahead.
Was Brad Stevens promoted like Bruce Arians?
Could be. Yeah, I think that might have been the case. Nevertheless, the two are totally different in their approach. Like Brian and I were talking about. Brad Stevens would blame himself. Like if Jason Tatum had a bad game, Brad Stevens would come in the press conference and say, I need to do a better job as a coach. I need to do a better job of putting Jason in a position to be more successful. They were like, hey, Jason was 4 of 28 from the floor. And he'd be like, I don't put him in a position to be successful. And that's on me. That's our coaching staff. We've got to make sure we give him opportunities to do what he does best. Udoka would be like, yeah, that stinks. Jason Tatum needs to be better. And he'd be like, that's a totally different approach to things. And that's the way he does it. He calls out everybody. It doesn't matter if you're high up on the totem pole, all the way down to the bottom of the totem pole, he'll call you out in the public if you don't do well. And it's got to be a different approach than the people in Boston were used to, right? Not only for the players, but for the media. All of a sudden he's like, wow, there's a real honest answer here from this guy. But he really is. He's done a really good job in the latter part of this season in getting this team to be together and playing at their strengths. And like Brian said, it's not Brad Stevens basketball where everybody gets these opportunities. Everybody gets – like, he will be like, nope, if you're not playing, bye. I'm putting some – like you – if Jason Tatum scores all the points or him and Jaylen Brown score all the points, that's fine as long as we win the game. And it's just – it's been really – this last part, he emphasizes defense at one of the best defensive teams in the league. I mean, he really has got this team to play really well. For a guy most people never heard of, I never heard of him. Like when he got hired as the head coach of the Celtics, that's a team I follow more closely than a lot of teams in the NBA. I was like, wow. I was like a lot of people in Boston when he got hired. Who is he and why was he hired? With all the names that have been bandied about, Celtics are one of the premier franchises in the NBA. Why are we going to a guy I've never heard of? But he's been good. He's been really, really good. So, and he's had a successful run this last half of the season. Like from January on, Celtics are one of the top teams in the NBA. And again, defensively, they're great. And like he said, that ability to restrain yourself by not calling timeout, because I'll be honest with you, that would have been my first reaction. This is why I'm not a head coach. As soon as the Celtics got that ball off that missed shot by Durant, I would have called timeout.
Or as soon as you got across the midfield or midcourt.
Midcourt, I would have called timeout to set up a play, giving Brooklyn a chance to set up a play. And he knew Brooklyn are terrible defensively. They're even worse in transition. He got the right basket.